Welcome to the Banter.
Spins, fires, a perfect game!
We're firing on all cylinders here, boys.
I'm fired up. I like Corey a lot, so I'm fired up. I'm ready for this one.
I've never heard of him, only heard about him so many times.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I met him a few times. One, he gave me one very good piece of advice. I was at the IP showcase. You were also there, RJ.
I got drilled in the chest.
Mr. Walt Burrows was there. Greg Hamilton was there. A bunch of people were there that, you know, guys that you need to know. And everybody was saying what up to him, shaking his hand. What's up? How you doing? Good to see you. Blah, blah, blah. All these scouts, all these college scouts, everybody saying what up to this guy. And I went up to him. I was like, bro, how do people say do that to me? Like, how do I walk into a room and be known? And he's like, you fucking show up until people do it. And that's it. That's all you got to do. You just keep showing up, show up every single time. Be at everything. And I was like, okay, there you go. Man, that's it.
Man, Walt Bros is a legend too. That guy recruited me for the junior national team when I was a 16, 15.
What a mistake. All right.
That hurts me pretty bad.
Wow. Well, let's get going. All right. Might as well use that beginning part as our walk-in because that kind of talks about our guy, right? He's going to be perfect. Here in a couple minutes. But before we introduce who we're talking about, because I didn't say his name on purpose. Welcome to the Battery, new episode. We're fucking firing on all cylinders. We've got episodes on episodes on episodes coming your way. Whenever this comes out, we'll find out later. But needless to say, how we doing, fella guys? What's going on? I haven't talked to you guys for a week. What up?
It's crazy, actually. Well, since Thursday, things are going good. I mean, getting into that routine, had a really long day today. I don't know if I told you guys about this, but like, so there's a couple's massage company that needed an English person to be into their stuff that they're launching in North America. And through word of mouth, it just happened to be me. So like all this morning and this afternoon, I was like the face and the voice of this fucking couple's massage stuff. And it took like four.
So this is the hard work that you were telling us about earlier?
Dude, I'm talking like I had to memorize a script. I had to go through it. Like you'd be energetic and remember the script and then remember what I'm trying to say. And then like, I'm in a studio. It's like the lights, the camera. The guy, it was like the whole nine. So it was like me, it was doing like the commentary. And then there was the actual masseuse, the guy who runs it. And then they had a female woman there that was getting massaged kind of thing. So we just went through all the stuff. And it's an instructional thing for normal people to give couples massages. And so it was kind of cool.
RJ.
Yes, sir.
Can you give us the commentary on a happy ending?
Well, you tug. I feel like both parties are sad. And then you let that. Okay. On you.
This is getting edited out. All right. That's getting edited out immediately.
Hey, you asked, boys. Gave you the content, not that you needed, but the one you deserved.
You can't change,
bro.
I'm just different. I've just always been built different. Isaiah, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm awesome. Can we plug the fundraiser campaign?
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. You guys both have so much going on. I wanted to bring that up.
Mine's over.
It still was cool, but the hell with your thing. Isaiah, let's talk about what you got going on, man. It's exciting.
Fired up.
But Isaiah, hold on. Before you do, this is going to come out after Christmas.
That's fine.
Okay, go.
The fundraiser ends like mid-January, I believe.
Okay, go.
All right. So we're raising $5,000 for homeless youth and families at risk, actually through a party in Vancouver, UGM. We're just trying to raise $5,000, help families out over Christmas through homeless shelters, Christmas hampers, food gifts, stuff like that. Actually, an organization I was part of growing up, they did some really good stuff for my mom and I and my family. So now I'm in a position to give back. So the kids got to give back. So yeah, this is a good place to share that. And yeah, I'm fired up for anyone who wants to support it.
Oh yeah. What are you at now?
What am I at? I actually was so surprised. I clicked it a couple days ago and I think I'm at like $2,500. I think.
Yeah. You were like $1,300 after like 24 hours.
Yeah. We were ripping. So everyone who was a part of that, I'm going to write you a letter saying thank you. Because I'm truly grateful. Just give me some time to work through it and get through the fundraiser. But yeah, unreal support so far.
Great cause from a great person. And I mean, you understand it, right? So, I mean, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. There are good causes and there are great causes. And this is definitely the latter.
Unreal.
It looks like our guest is here, guys.
Oh, wow.
He's here. He's right on time, which I'm not surprised about. I'm going to let him in. You guys ready? You guys ready for this shit?
Did you give him the heads up?
I gave him the heads up. I gave him the heads up. He's coming in hot.
Okay, I thought it was going to be like, welcome to the fire.
Oh, he's coming in hot. He's ready to go. The man. Look at that office, though.
That's
holy smokes.
That office is 10 out of 10. That's a nicer office than I'm ever going to have in my entire life, I think. Uh-oh. The office is gone. Oh, the office is back. Hello, sir.
How you doing, pal? Gentlemen?
Yo, we're good to go. Wow.
We were just commenting how sick of an office you got back there.
Look at the office. Holy smokes. I got a green screen, right?
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff going on back there. So it's a little bit messy right now, but a lot of stuff going on.
I got to say, the first thing that caught my eye is that big, shiny piece of silver thing over there by the TV. What's that?
That was from this summer. That's the first tournament we got a chance to win with OBJ this summer.
Oh, spoiler alert. That episode's not out yet.
Yeah, it's not out yet. So, but yeah, that's the last tournament we played this summer. We ended up winning that one. So I thought I'd throw it in the office for a little while and have a look at it every time I walk in.
Nice reminder how good of a program you got there. Not a big deal.
We're lucky. Very fortunate, for sure.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Corey Eckstein. Eckstein? I never know. I'm always scared to say it out loud.
We'll go with Eckstein.
Okay. All right. I said that one first. So that's good to go, right? The president and director of player development for Ontario Blue Jays, who happened to steal the legend of Sean Schaefer from men's leagues in BC all over.
Yeah, so might have snuck him out east with me, threw him in my suitcase, and yeah, it was we negotiated a little while on that one, but happy to have him. He's doing really well out here as well. So good baseball guy. Man.
Well, welcome to the battery. I appreciate you're a guy that I've been wanting to have on here for a long time. It's just been about when is the best time to have Corey on. So I appreciate having you. Thanks for joining us.
No, I appreciate you guys having me.
So what's going on right now with OBJ? What are you guys doing?
Finally, we're back indoors. You know, the government has allowed us to get back in, and finally, well, it looks like we're going to have a normal off season. Hopefully, we'll knock on wood here with the cases slowly going up. But it's been nearly 2 years since we really had a true off season, right? Obviously, we got created during the pandemic there and went south for a while. But this is the first time that I've had a chance to really kind of, you know, get my feet on the ground with our full player staff and players for that matter. And we're going 3 days a week right now. They lift, our pitchers go Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. Our position guys go Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And then around that, we have a lot of open hours where guys can come in and get additional lifts in and additional work with our coaching staff. So it's full tilt. Our building's pretty busy. Like, we got a lot of rentals. We got, Sandlot clinics that go on. We got Cairo and physio downstairs. We got volleyball. There's a lot going on in the building, so we got to get creative with scheduling, obviously. But for the most part, I would say guys are in here 3 to 5 times a week. So
I'll park it. How many guys you got in that program right now?
We're at 136, I believe. So yeah, between 14U to 18U. And we actually scaled back. When I first got here, they had 9 teams, and I kind of got here and said, that's not really what I want to be about. Kind of got to the point where they were taking players for the sake of taking players, and that's not going to fly with me. And anyway, so we scaled it back to 6, which was, you know, probably the best move that we've done. So 14U to 18U, just under 140 right now. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a juggling act, but I mean, thankfully we got a lot of coaches. I think we got about 15 full-time guys here in total, just over 20. So I mean, it's kind of nice. I joke about it all the time. It's one of those things where back home I was kind of used to having to do a little bit of everything, and now I get on the floor and, you know, you got coaches in place that are more than capable of doing their job, and I just sit back and, you know, I throw VP when I want, I hit a fungo when I want. It's amazing, right? So
just the press, just get to roll around whatever you want to do.
It's hard, though. It's been a tough transition. I like, you know, getting my hands dirty, and I'm a baseball guy, right? But it's been nice to kind of transition a little bit into this role as well. So
how's the family been with the move? I know you got the young kids and Courtney, obviously. Courtney, yeah. Being TikTok famous, must help a little bit.
We'll talk about that later. no, it was a crazy time to move, obviously, beginning of a pandemic. just the way it worked out. It was, we're in a good spot. I mean, we did well in our house back home, which ultimately helped us to move up. Kids are doing well. They've adjusted. They're in a brand new school. We're in an area with a lot of young families, and they're playing, you know, t-ball and soccer and hockey, and wife's doing okay. It's tough being away from family, obviously. I can't remember last time her and I had a chance to go out and, you know, just leave the kids at home. But so we definitely miss having the babysitters, but we've made it work. She's enjoying it. She's made some friends out here, and she's keeping busy with like TikTok, like you mentioned.
Oh man. You'd be rattled. You brought that up. Eh?
Yeah. The creepy dolls, as we call them.
It was a good video though. That was hilarious. I was losing it watching that.
I think it's at like 16 million or something crazy right
Holy
now.
Holy! Oh, we're talking
messing around. With
I don't think we're just 16 million.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. Okay. All right. Respect.
That's nuts.
That's nuts. I thought you were talking about you got like 500 million. I was like,
no, it kept creeping.
Oh man, that must have been a madhouse. Hey, so this is a dumb question, man, but like, where is OBJ located in Ontario?
We're in Mississauga.
My bad.
It's all good.
I figured Mississauga.
About 25 minutes from downtown on a good day.
Okay.
I'm living out in Ancaster, which is just past Hamilton. So it's about 40 minutes for me every day, which can be a pain in the butt with traffic out here. But it's not bad.
You're not like you're not used to it living in Vancouver, right?
Yeah. Well, he's Abby, though. There's no traffic.
Oh, he's Abby. The less I know. Come on.
You got two lanes out west, though. Here you got 4, 5, 6 lanes to get home, right? So
madness.
And everybody drives about 140 out here. That's the go-to. So if I'm not going 130, I got somebody up my butt every day.
But, wow.
It's a little different. So.
Well, I got a ton of questions about, and we've all been watching the series because, sure. I mean, it's a great look. Like when we all heard that, at least out here with, you know, my Blue Jays, you know,
sure.
When we all heard that you guys were going down, we're like, fuck, that would be unreal. Like, can you imagine that, just going down to Florida for how long are you guys down there?
Six. I was down there for 7. I think our guys were down there just under 6 weeks. Yeah. Wow. So it was
straight.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. It was, logistically, it wasn't a challenge, but obviously you got to get creative when you're taking 35 bodies and 8 staff members and 2 media guys down there for 6 weeks. But we were kind of desperate, in all honesty, right? We just, like I said in the documentary, we weren't willing to have another year of COVID, you know. In a perfect world, would have brought everybody down, but we offered it to everybody. We probably could have taken about 60 kids down, in all honesty. That was the response. But then we had to make some tough decisions as far as, okay, well, how many games are we going to be able to play, you know, field time and all those things, right? So we ended up taking down a majority 17, 18-year-old kids, some 16s as well, and ended up playing 4 tournaments, a bunch of exhibition games. We had the City of Palms, which is the old Boston Red Sox stadium down there. Got the clubhouse every day and just went to work. So pretty fortunate, yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. I'm sitting here watching my pop or eating my popcorn, watching it last night. Again. And this is incredible. So you're in the middle of COVID, and I know you just moved out there, and you're trying to make a big impact on a sure. on a program like this. How does something like this unfold, and how, like, it's a feat to get 35 guys, 8 staff, and media guys down there for months, and then sure. put together a good team and make sure these guys compete. Can you talk about some of the logistics and the behind the scenes of all of that?
Yeah, it was, in all honesty, we were kind of just sitting around the office and just putting ideas on a whiteboard, really. Thankfully, you know, between myself and Steeter and Joe, we got a lot of, you know, connections in the U.S. and we reached out to a bunch of different places. Ultimately, Perfect Game came back with, you know, a master proposal, and we're sitting looking at it one day and we're like, you know, how the hell can we not say no to this, right? So basically we got that, we pitched to our parent group. You know, logistically with COVID, it was one of those things where obviously some parents were reluctant to send their kids. We tried to, you know, isolate our players as much as possible down there, even being in Florida where it's literally wide open down there, right? You'd never know. You know, we went to public places like the Walmarts or whatever when we had to load up for food and water and those type of things. You know, we required masks and just as safe as possible, right? We were literally at the hotel, at the field, and nothing more. We did a couple outings. We went to obviously the probably saw in episode two. We went to the ballpark the one night. We went golfing in episode one, which was fun. But outside of that, honestly, it was really just baseball. And wow. It was kind of easier that way. And you can't get in trouble when you're getting out and doing different things, right? So, it was
nothing bad ever happens in Florida.
No, yeah. I mean, thankfully, that way. Oh, yeah, right. Thankfully, nothing happened, you know, when it came to getting everybody tested at the back end of the trip. We tried to go through a pharmacy. That was an absolute shit show. So we just finally ended up, there was a private company that they came to the hotel and came to the field, tested everybody, and we were good to go. We had in place, we were making sure that, you know, if somebody did pop negative, that was on the parent to make sure that they, you know, had the additional funds to keep their son down there. But in our budget, we would also have stayed with those players until they were able to fly back. So, but yeah, that was really the gist of it. It was strictly baseball, and it was fun to see, you know, the change from start to finish. Like, we took those players down, and then we come back and we see kind of the players that ended up staying back home that summer. And, you know, there was a big difference between who's on a field every day and who wasn't, right? And in a perfect world, we would have brought everybody, but the reality was it wasn't possible. So
it almost seemed like people who didn't do a lot of – sorry, Wedge.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, we also did our own thing over the first course of the pandemic. I mean, don't need to get into it, but it was really interesting to see that next year who really didn't do anything for that offseason. It's like you missed a year, yeah. You know, and that's a very valuable year because, I mean – all things aside, you guys went down pretty incredible, but the fact that it was high, like seniors in high school or, you know, even juniors or sophomores, you know, whatever it was, that is to me the most impressive thing because you're dealing with, you know, gong shows a lot of the time, right? Like, yeah. Let's be honest.
There's the one kid in the dock, he's always on there. I forget which kid he's got. He's got the flow. You just talk and talk.
Yeah, that's Marzik. Yeah, Marzik. He's
like, that kid is definitely, you definitely knock on that kid's door 30 minutes after room check, you know?
Oh, yeah. Sure, he'll be in a few more episodes as well. No, he's a good kid, but he likes the camera, that's for sure.
Yeah, so. And I had a kind of similar thought process as RJ here, but my thought kind of went towards, like, you guys went down and played against all these American kids, and like, they never have the break that we have, and like, you know, Alan Cox, and we talked to him about like how Canadians have kind of a fortunate setup because we get to go in the lab for 3 months because of weather. Whereas Americans, like, they go down and, or they don't go down there. They are down and they just play all year long. Like, did you feel that there was a learning curve for your boys when you went down there?
Yeah, 100%, especially out of the gate. And you probably saw it in episode two. I mean, that's why it was called growing pains. It was, just speed of the game, right? We kind of mentioned it. It was, we were behind. We hadn't seen velocity in a while. You can try and mimic whatever you want, and, you know, when we're inside indoors doing our stuff, but just that internal clock, right? The compete behind it, right? You can compete so much indoors, but once you get outside and you start playing some good American clubs, it's just different. You know, it probably took us a good 3 weeks to get our feet underneath us and slowly start to see some progression. But yeah, those guys didn't stop, and you could tell, you know, it's amazing to watch some of those teams that we got a chance to play. Visibility wise, it was great. Obviously playing in some big events. That was kind of most important for us, was to get back and being seen again, having eyes behind home plate, watching us play, right? Those two events that we got a chance to play down there were pretty heavily scouted, which was awesome. Yeah. Good environment for us.
Did you get an uptick on phone calls about your guys after that trip? I'm sure.
Yeah, we did. I would say probably our fall trip. After that was when the phone really started to ring about our guys. But I would say the summer trip was just as valuable for sure. But the fall trip's a whole other beast, right? You get on campus and you're having, you know, conversations with the coaches and taking BP, and you get, you know, Skip behind the turtle watching our guys. That's when, you know, doors really start to open for our guys for sure. Yeah.
Where'd you guys go in the fall?
Oh boy!
Was it a trip? Or
yeah, our fall trip. Oh, we played 26 schools. So yeah, we literally got back from summer, and I guess it was maybe two, three weeks later, we were back on the road for another month. We played Virginia Tech, Georgia Gwinnett, McLennan, all the top top ranked universities and junior colleges as well. So that's a whole other beast. I mean, that's
a monster. Georgia Gwinnett, the number one NAI program in the, in the States right now, right?
For sure.
Arguably, right? But
yeah. No, just that's the logistical one where you got to be on your toes. I mean, you're getting up, you're busting 2 hours, you get off the bus, you're playing anywhere from nine to 18 innings a day, and you're back on the bus going to the next state, right? So just to making sure they're getting fed appropriately and getting enough sleep and staying in, you know, relatively nice hotels. And that was fun. I've done that trip 3 years ago when they first had me out. I got a chance to get a taste of it. We did Florida State leading into Jupiter. So, but that was my first full trip where I got to experience it, and it was pretty special. So you guys will hopefully get a chance to see it in the documentary as well.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And I mean, us with North Delta, we were very appreciative of your old boys over at Abbey that took a couple of our guys down on their own fall trip this year. And they did.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay. I didn't realize you had some players that went.
Yeah. Latimer, Hepburn, just a couple of those guys. Like
nice.
a couple of the more scoutable, I would say,
sure.
guys kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
But they went down, and that kind of experience for kids, like they both, like Hepburn, for instance, like he's a dude, but he went down and got two full ride on the table just to two like different that. D1s. And he was like, wow. I don't get this if I don't come down here, right? So that kind of trip. I wanted to kind of talk about your guys' culture, because I think we're getting a really good view of this through the doc. And one thing that I noticed right away when you guys walked into the clubhouse at the new facility, which it's awesome that you guys were the last tenants at that place with all the history, sure. as Coach Steed was saying, but love, L-O-V-E on the big billboard there. What does that mean?
Yeah, that was just kind of our daily mantra as far as how we want to go about our business. You know, Steeder kind of put that together for our guys, and it was just something that's usually typically on the lineup card every day, or, you know, everywhere we walked, you know, on our bus or whatever it may be, there was something that just as a reminder as far as what our values are moving forward, and just really how we carry ourselves both on and off the field. I think that's a lost cause sometimes, a lost art, and you get caught up in wins and losses. But, you know, for me, it's always been about, you know, you're going to be a human being a lot longer than you're going to be a baseball player, right? So just instilling those values early on. And some guys buy in, some guys, you know, don't. Some guys, it takes a while to really understand the message that we're trying to send. But Steeder does a really good job from that standpoint. He's managed, you know, the Northwoods Leeds for years, and some scouting background there with him. And just, you know, his presence is – it's firm and fair. And but he carries himself a different way. His standards are a lot higher than most, and I think it's a good thing, in all honesty, right? So
it looked like an acronym. What is LOV, like the
lean on values every day? Lean on values every day.
Wow. Yeah. I like that. And you're right. I mean, people are human beings longer than their baseball players, unless their name is RJ. So it's important to really
body's falling apart kind
of things, right? Lean on values every day. I like that, man. Sure. That's nice.
That's really nice. Sure. Yeah, it is really nice. Yeah.
And sometimes us as coaches forget that too, though, right? Yes. It's here in episode 2. He kind of lost his mind there after that first loss. It was anyway. So
I loved it though, because it wasn't like personal, right? No. Which some coaches have a difficult time being a figure that holds people accountable. And that's what I saw that conversation as I was watching it, was he's holding them accountable. He's talking about things that they can control, like your attentiveness. He said one time, like, you lose your focus if you don't get a ball every 8 pitches. Like, how is that an acceptable response to the game of baseball, especially if you're playing a position like right field or something like that? You might get one chance to impact the game per game as a defender. So, like, that's a controllable thing for an athlete. And that's something that a 17-year-old has a hard time figuring out.
No, we talk about that. We talk about that a lot just in our pregame this fall. I mean, there's guys that, I mean, your only opportunity might be during infield outfield. Your only opportunity might be taking ground balls during, you know, BP for those coaches that are on site to watch you go about your business. Right. So yeah, you're bang on as far as that's concerned, for sure.
So what's the day-to-day conversation to reinforce, like, let's get into it, let's stay focused. Like, is that an individual conversation? Is that a group conversation?
My style personally, I like to do a lot of one-on-one time with my players. I usually use BP before, you know, warm-ups, whatever it may be, to roam around and kind of shoot the shit with the guys. And, you know, depending on how they played the day before, that's kind of typically when I'll have my conversations. That's just my style personally. Steeder is usually the guy that would, you know, address before and after practice. But yeah, the message was always, you know, pretty much the same each day, right? Carry yourself as a professional. And even on days where you're not feeling 100%, right? You're on the road for 6 weeks. You're on the road for 30 days traveling in the fall trip. There's going to be days where you feel like shit. You know, how are you going to respond? Right? Yeah. Put your big boy pants on and figure it out and go, you know? So,
oh, man.
Yeah.
Can we open some eyes for Canadian athletes? So I was actually lucky enough to live in Jupiter last year, and I'm actually moving back there next week.
Nice. Little brag.
And nice.
Good spot.
It's a good spot. I love it there. But
he's not even going to say why. He's just going to keep going. He's going to work with Eric Cressy. He's going to work with Eric Cressy.
Yeah. Wow.
I'll say it for you, Isaiah. I know you know. I know you don't like
somebody. Somebody has to say it for you.
Unreal. I just wanted to ask a genuine question, boys. Unbelievable.
Yeah, humble brag. Never heard anyone.
So, I mean, I watch some of these young kids. They're, you know, let's say eighth grade, and for the next 5 years, they have four more months of summer. And over like 10 years, how can a Canadian kid catch up to that? Like we're kind of stuck in our small pond up here, and then we see these guys down there, and you might be better than me, but you've also had, you know, 8 more years of practice than me just because of your physical location. So sure. I just want to open up some ears and some eyes for Canadian athletes to say, hey, like, you have to give it everything you got every single day for the rest of your high school career to just have a shot. Yeah. I think you'll never truly understand that until you're a part of that culture. But yeah, I just want to get your standpoint on that.
It's a good question, because, you know, coming from out west, where I thought like my players were invested and I thought I was doing a good job, like when I got out here, like it was a different beast. Like, you know, for me, I don't know what it is, but the players that I'm dealing with now, they're hungrier. They want it more. They're more dedicated. Like, and I'm not knocking my former program. There's a lot of good players that busted their ass, and that's not what I'm trying to get at here. But it was eye-opening for me to watch these guys go about their business. And maybe it's because we're in a 50,000 square foot building with, you know, all the bells and whistles, where they want to come here and get their work in every day, right? You know, I'm still a firm believer in, you know, dual athletes, dual sports, guys, you know, playing a little bit of everything at that age growing up. I think the landscape of baseball in general has changed, you know, with social media, as far as being seen and, you know, players being able to advocate for themselves a little bit and teaching themselves in regards to, you know, sometimes I'm dealing with players that I feel are smarter than me almost, right? Like you have to be on your toes, right? Yeah, you have no choice, right? Or you're going to look like an idiot, you know? So, I mean, from that standpoint, obviously I think facilities like ours, and it's different out west than out east. I feel like every program out here has the facilities that we have, but out west, everybody has a park but no facility, right? So there's kind of, it's one of those things. It's a juggling act, right? Like our season out here is condensed. The teams out east, they end up going south a lot more than the teams back west do, just because it's a hop, skip, and a jump where we are with the border. I think the teams out in BC are very lucky to have the Premier League schedule that they do. It's very competitive, obviously, but I don't think they travel enough or as much as some of the programs that are out east currently. And that's just my own personal opinion. So,
well, and that's probably where the hunger and the drive comes from, right? Just because they have the opportunity to see those guys down south way more often. I mean, again, myself from Winnipeg, like imagine you guys in BC and you guys in Ontario, sure. Me being from Winnipeg, it was like my first trip down south, I was like, my first at bat, I was shaking. I was like, holy, this kid's throwing over 84. I'm going to freak out. You know what I mean? But it's just like, wow, what an eye-opener that is. It's just a different ball game altogether.
It's different. I think the expectations are different out here too. Obviously, they're paying a lot more money to be a part of programs like this. We were joking about it in the office. Like, we're going through the college recruitment piece right now, and we got some kids with some pretty good offers on the table. And I'm thinking, like, if my players back home had these offers, like, they're signing the papers right away. Mm. And out here, it's like, okay, you got two or three offers on the table right now, and they're like, I don't know. I think I can do something better. I'm like, what are we doing here? You know, especially, you know, with COVID, right? Like, it's a different beast with the transfer portal and all those things that are going on in the world, you know? So, just a different landscape for sure.
Yeah. That backlog of players is showing out to be very difficult, especially like, I mean, I love Eric Sim, but also the JUCO conversation. The JUCO is harder to get into than ever right now when it comes to going to a place that you actually want to go to. Like, there's a lot of JUCOs out there that you don't really want to go to. because either you're not going to enjoy the city or the town, in most cases, the town, the weather, the organization, the league, their compete level in their league. Like there's a lot of, and a lot of Canadians I've noticed have no idea. They're like, oh, I'm going to go to this place because they texted me back. So, and as you said,
it happens. I mean, there's been guys that they don't get any offers and all of a sudden they get a text message from a coach and they're like, oh, I'm going here. You know, there's a lot of homework that needs to be done going into it. You said, geographically, where do you want to be?
And that's a credit. I think that's probably one of the best things that OBJ and other places that are invested in these kind of things can offer is you guys, if someone can come into your office right now, knock on the door, ask you about a school, and you're going to be able to know like what you know. Whereas you go to another program that doesn't have that luxury, they come in, they go, hey, this guy's talking to me. And the guy goes, great. Sounds good. Good for you, man. Congrats.
Sure. Right? I'm excited for you, man. Let's go, buddy. Let's do this together.
Yeah. And it's tough. That is tough. Good
for the program.
There was a moment, and I want to talk about Coach Steed because I fucking love that man. Just based on the first two episodes, that dude is like, and you said it too, like he's a good mix of old and new. He clearly cares about his team and about his players, but then like he can crack the whip a little bit. He can kind of say like, hey, you guys got to get your shit together. And I have an analogy that I use. I call it the roller coaster. I didn't make it up. I got it from my college coach. Where you just ride the highs and then when you hit the lows, like your team's fucked kind of thing. Right. So, and he was talking about simple compete and that was the phrase that he used and it sounded very similar. And I want to know about like your guys' ongoing conversation, both as an internal coaching staff with all of your members, as well as your narrative back to the players about the simple compete and how you kind of try to teach them that you guys don't need to be like way up here. Because it's really tough to like stop yourself from going way down when you go from up here, right? So that up and down kind of that idea with your culture and with your energy level.
I think if there's one word that explains that to a T is really that we talk about all the time is just consistency, daily consistency. That's really what it comes back to for us. Not too high, not too low. Other than that, honestly, Wedge, like it was. From a coaching standpoint, that's all we can really ask of our players. That's
what comes back to.
How does a coach set that example? Because that example has to be set. Players can't just pick it up, right?
I think it comes from us. I think I've been on staffs where you have one or two guys that are consistent in their day to day work, and then you have a couple guys that show up and. They just want to lean on a fungo or sit on a bucket all day. I think it starts from the top and everything you do. And it starts in business as well, obviously, right? But for us, it was important. It's important to Steeder. I let him pick his staff from that standpoint. And I know he wants to be around like-minded people because he knows it's going to be a trickle-down effect to his players, right? So, just day-to-day consistency from us. And the expectation level from our players day-to-day was very high, so.
Absolutely.
I think we glanced over JUCOs and schools a little bit. And I think the great part about these podcasts is it doesn't matter how much money you have in your account, doesn't matter what organization you play for, you can still learn something from this. So let's say we've got an athlete who maybe doesn't have a set of coaches who can, say, hey, this is a good JUCO because it'll build you up to this position. What's some of that back homework that some of these athletes who might not have a Corey Eckstein, what can they look for in potential schools and how can they start that process?
Reach out to people you trust first and foremost. I mean, I still have players back home that even though I'm not on site coaching with them, they do reach out and ask questions. I think it's a family decision at the end of the day, like financially, how much money is that family willing to afford? I think there's, when we start talking to four-year schools, the families are taken back by, even if you get 60-70%, some of those schools, you're still paying north of $15,000 US a year, right? And so they're taken back by that. I think there's a lot of families that look down upon as far as junior colleges are concerned, which in reality, it's not a bad option. You're probably going to open up more doors, potentially going to a junior college to get to a four-year that you aspire to get to. There's so many different factors geographically, Wedge mentioned that earlier. conference wise, you know, the amount of bodies that they're bringing in each fall. I mean, I'm hearing stories of north of 65 players coming in the fall now, right? At junior colleges. Wow. They're older, you know, they're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger, they're 23, 24 years old, right? So there's so many different factors that that go into to making a final decision. But at the end of the day, I think that player has to find somebody that he trusts. And I'm not a big advocate of, you see a lot of online social media type, you know, I don't know what you call them, but representation that pay me $3,000, I'm going to find you a scholarship. Like, that's all fine and dandy. And don't get me wrong, some of those guys end up, you know, finding places for these players to play. But for me, I want to take care of the players that are inside my building. That's my job. And I don't want them to feel the need to have to go spend additional money outside that program. But going back to your point, if that family doesn't feel like they're getting what they need, then you need to be proactive, right? And go about your business and, you know, send emails and not mass emails, you know, individualized emails to coaches and videos and things like that. And just, you know, rely on people you trust at the end of the day. So,
where do you fall? And I know you helped out with UFE, but the Canadian college baseball kind of, because Ontario has good universities and they have decent programs. Like, there's a good handful of those baseball programs that are fairly good. And then there out in BC, there's some that are growing as well. Like, how do you have that conversation with a player to say, like, hey, maybe Canadian college is a good idea?
I've had a few conversations about it. I love where it's going out west. The only problem out here with the universities in Ontario is the schedule, right? They play the fall and they don't play the spring, right? So really? Trying to it's
real a weird short. Decision. I don't really understand it, but
yeah, I guess field time and getting out here, like they can start their seasons in March out west, right? But out here, you may not get on the field till third week of May, right? So logistically, it's a little bit different. But watching some of the programs, the way they've grown, especially through COVID, you've seen a lot of bounce back guys coming back, and I think that league's definitely getting stronger. They just don't know any better. Like when I talk about programs like UFB and University of Victoria and Okanagan College, you're like, who the hell are these guys, right? Mm-hmm. It's really too bad, right? Because at the end of the day, you're getting a good education. You know, you're getting a chance to play maybe, what, 40, 50 games?
Yeah, the regular season is about 30, and then most programs will do like that trip. And then the fall schedule, like I know OC, they try to get like 60 games in the fall, whether that's JV games or varsity games against other programs. And Isaiah is from TRU. I'm sure he can touch on that, on the consistency across the league.
And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, though. It's like, for me, you're seeing a lot of guys that are taking their gap year now, that overage year, which is fine with COVID. I think at the end of the day, you're really just putting yourself on par with some of the kids in the States anyway, because they typically graduate a year older. But why not go play a year of university at Okanagan College? For us, when I was at UFB, the thing that I tried to instill was, come here for a year or two and let's try and get you the hell up, you know, if you're ready to go. And, you know, I look at Riley Jepson, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, he's a prime example.
He's a stud.
He had a great time down at UT there. You know, and he did.
He's a pro ball player now, right? Like he made it to. He played in the AA last year in like their kind of weird COVID modified year, and then this year he just signed another contract to play another year for the same team, because he hit like 430 for this team. I've never seen this kid's batting average under 400 ever.
It won't go on. It's crazy.
Missed throwing BP to him. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there are guys getting drafted too, like, not to shout out OC too much, like Brigden got drafted, PBA's gotten three or four guys drafted, VIU's had a couple guys drafted, I'm sure TRU's had a guy or two drafted, right? Like, it happens if you're good enough.
No, 100%. I think people just fall in love with the romance of being recruited, right? I mean, that's what it is. It's a romance, right? Like, they whine and dine you, and they tell you what you want to hear, and then you get, you know, step foot on campus, and what can you do for me? I got to put food on my table for my family, right? I got to win, right? I'm going to play the best players. You know, if you're not one of them, you're not my starting nine, right? So, and then the novelty kind of wears off after that, right? But that's what you're trying to instill in these players, that, you know, you're going to run into adverse situations, and it's not going to be what it's made out to be, right? You're going to have to grind and work your way through it. And
everybody likes to be courted, right?
That's right.
Feels good. Come on, now. We can't, none of us can deny that. It's a great.
I've never been courted.
Your time's coming.
I'll take you to dinner next time I come in. Don't worry, buddy. I'll take care of you.
All right.
Corey, I want to bring you back. We talked about this. So this is your first actual off season with these kids too, right? Yes. You obviously, because of COVID and stuff like that, where are you guys at right now? And I mean, what's the, I guess, where's everyone at? Are you guys hitting? Are you guys throwing? Like, what's going on with both pitchers and hitters?
Where do we start? There's a lot going on. Our pitchers, Mike Steed, I don't even have to worry about him from that standpoint. He's got his dates from the moment they step foot into season time. Every day is allotted for as far as what they're doing. And, they're on ramping, and, they did their pull down assessments. They just did Mount Below last week after we shut them down for a little bit, obviously. Mm-hmm. Our weight room assessments, first and foremost, we kind of prioritize our players based on what their, deficiencies are. Connor Morrow's awesome as far as that's concerned. So yeah, they're lifting three times a week, working on their mobility. We talked about doing yoga this year. We haven't had a chance to really implement that yet defensively. So a typical practice is usually about 3.5 hours. They'll come in and we'll have three rotations. They'll either be in the infield or outfield for an hour. They'll have a lift for an hour, and they'll be in the cage for an hour. So it's kind of nice. I mean, like I said earlier, in the cages, we got 6 or 7 coaches roaming around. Infielders got, 3 or 4 coaches. Weight room's got 2 or 3 coaches. So it's kind of nice for myself just being able to bounce around from spot to spot and help out kind of where needed, and just keep my eyes on the floor and make sure everything's going okay.
Same. Wow, dude, 3.5 hours. I mean, I think our practices here with the 15 U team is an hour and a half. I think it's an hour and a half.
We're trying to get everybody. RJ's
also, I don't know if you know this, Zach, but RJ's in Czech right now. He's in Czech Republic. Okay. Yeah. So he's doing the what? I don't know why I'm fucking talking, RJ. This is your job.
No, you got it. It's fine.
I don't want to be wrong, guy. That's me saying I don't know what you do.
So, what age group are you?
15U, first time head coach of the 15U team. So I'm just, just trying to, I've been supporting Cast a lot. So I'm just curious what you guys are doing in that regard, but it's kind of the same thing that we have going on here, just a lot shorter of a timeline, throughout the days,
we're trying to build basically towards IMG, which is our spring training trip in March. 13th of March is when we'll head down south, hopefully, knock on wood with COVID, but make sure our arms are, I guess our pro day out here, I think it's family day, which is February 21st. So the goal for us is to make sure our arms are ready to go by then. We kind of identify 48 pitcher only, so I guess, if you will, that are inside our pitching program. And then we probably have another, 20 dual guys that will start throwing bullpens kind of end of January and kind of work towards season time, just so it's not foreign to them by the time the season rolls around. But that's kind of how we script it out here.
I got one more question about the offseason. Sorry. So from the top down, is it the same mentality on the hitting and pitching side of it and how you want to go about it? For instance, let's just say the hitting side, I get it. There's a lot of personalities, a lot of different bodies, and more importantly, a lot of knowledge between everyone. So how do you guys meet in the middle with all that going on?
Yeah, we have coordinators at the top that kind of, they'll dictate. I'll sit down with them. So basically before the offseason hit, all of our coaches kind of sat down in a room and we literally went kind of through everything as far as how we want to approach it this offseason. Obviously, you kind of hit the nail on the head. Everybody has their own ideas when it comes to hitting and fielding. But I think for the most part, we are kind of on the same page. Our coaches know that our coordinators are going to dictate what each practice plan kind of looks like every night. But for me, I think coaching the individual is important. I think there are players that I didn't want it to ever be cookie cutter. I think there's certain things that work for some. There's certain things that don't. And just, having a lot of voices can be a problem at times, but I also think it can be a good thing because that one coach might say something that does click that might not coincide with what somebody else is saying. And at the end of the day, for me, my ego is not that big anymore. 10, 15 years ago, I think it was, but I don't give a shit anymore. Right. Like whatever works for that player, that's really all that matters at the end of the day, So, and I think we're in a good place as far as the staff's concerned. We talk a lot. They're not just coaches here. There's some good friendships and we can shoot the shit. And we disagree a lot too, which is what I want. I want our coaches to have their opinions, and we go toe to toe from time to time. But I think it's a healthy environment for sure.
Yeah, it's great. It's such a nice luxury to have, to be able to have dates like the pro day and stuff like that you can have as a carrot for the kids, because there's so much other than it being the season, like, because then I think when, especially when you're inside for so long, like you forget that that you're building towards something. You just kind of get lost in the openness of the 3 month to 4 month. And then, I mean, RJ and I are both Prairie guys, so like we're used to 6 or 7 months. Sure. And like, there's a dark time in that period where you're like, why am I?
We're getting there. We're getting
in a hole.
Why am I doing T swings again, yeah, man? Like, no, this sucks. But I mean, having that pro day in February, like, do you have the 14, all like 14s and all the way up to 18s that go on that day? And then for the younger guys, is that for the experience? Because those guys are obviously.
So the pro day is actually, the pro day is going to change this year. Typically, every program would have their own, like OBJ Scout Day, Toronto Med Scout Day. The scouts, they don't like it. I mean, at the end of the day, they want to see the best players. So it sounds like this year they're going to change that. It'll be at either one of our venues or field house or whoever it may be that wants to host it. It'll just be the you know, the 17s and 18s, maybe 6 to 10 players per program type thing. But yeah, for us, I mean, we do have our 14s and our 18s practicing together every Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. We mix it up a little bit, but I think it's a good opportunity for some of our older guys to lead by example and show them, you know, how to do things. And don't get me wrong, some guys are better than others in that regard, but I think it's important for some of our younger guys to be with our old guys and watch them how they go about their business. So
it's just a great opportunity to also show them the speed of the game and how much quicker it gets in those 4 years. That's huge. Kidding. We're doing the same thing here. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Eck. You're the guy.
No, I was just going to say, you talk about the dark times of, you know, you're in the inside for 2-3 months. We're kind of getting to that point right now. Everybody's ready for Christmas and we're doing our, I kind of implemented, Steeter did his holiday challenge. You see the road to Omaha type stuff on Twitter with the colleges. We're going to do a road to Jupiter holiday challenge with our position guys this week. So we'll kick the shit out of them a little bit.
There you go.
Around it, kind of break for Christmas and go from there. So
awesome. Yeah, man, that's great. There's a big elephant in the room question that I think needs to be asked, because Okotoks and OBJ, right? Uh-huh. I'm from Edmonton, right? I have to do it. So there's the target on your back, right? And you guys talk about this in the documentary too, where Coach C was talking about how like other teams will be watching you guys and seeing the amount of bodies, seeing how nice your stuff is, seeing how many coaches you got, see like all this, how they perceive it as, you know, privilege, I suppose. How do you keep the kids humble? Because that is a lot of stuff that they get that other people don't get, but B, say fuck you back, because it's not their fault. Like they're good. And they're like I said, I grew up in Edmonton. I played Okotoks my entire life. Growing up playing Okotoks, I hate Okotoks until now. I'm a grown up and I'm more mature ish. And I'm able to go like, you know, these kids are still kids. They're good players. They like baseball just the same as me. Right. I may have a ratty cage that I came up in, but I still took a lot of swings. Right. That kind of thing. So like, how do you
it's do a loaded, that's
I know it is. Question. I know it is. I apologize.
You take the fifth on this one.
For me, I never want to be second. So and when I say by that, like I take offense when I see another program do something and I'm like, shit, why didn't I think of that? You know, like that's kind of the way I like to do things. So and I say this respectfully, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, we've done lately that I'm starting to see from other programs try and mimic, that's awesome. Like I'm all about growing the game in Canada. Like I really am. Right. So I really don't have an issue with it, but sometimes it is flattering, or sometimes I do chuckle when, you know, you start to see outside programs try and do the things that you're doing, and they might not be able to do it to the standards that, you know, we try and do things at, right. You know, from not allowing our kids' heads to get too big. For me, it always came back to community, right? Like one thing that I do want to implement more of out here inside this organization is community work, you know, getting back to grassroots and working with, you know, younger level age kids, you know, Challenger baseball, which I'm sure you're, you know, obviously familiar with that with Baseball BC, just things like that, right? To get them back to their roots and realize kind of where they came from. You know, one thing that we wanted to implement this year too was a lot of the time, bigger programs like us, we're the ones that get the credit for sending the players to college. Well, in reality, yeah, we probably were the ones talking to those college coaches. And yes, we maybe got them on campus. But some of those coaches that grew up with those players, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, they should get some credit too at the end of the day, right? You know, and that's something that I kind of want to, you know, instill a little bit more. It's not just OBJ. There's a lot of people that go into the development of our players, right? So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's still kind of early for me. It's, what, a year and a half now that I've been here. So I haven't implemented necessarily all the things that I want to implement yet, but I think we're slowly getting to the point where we're getting to where we need to be. So, but I'm very competitive. Yes, I don't want to be second. I think we've been very creative with how we've gone about our business during COVID. And in all honesty, I think it's good. I hope, you know, I laugh because Okotoks, they're starting to post more videos online with what they're doing inside their building. It's like we post one, they post one. And I love Holic. I love dude. Like we're good buddies, right? And at the end of the day, it's a competitive environment. And I love it.
You guys have the plans to do the East versus West kind of thing too, right?
We're coming out to the best of the West this year. So,
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
That's huge.
Let's go.
We just finalized that last week. So it was one or the other. Our budget was kind of in place. Our U.S. travel schedule this summer is pretty extensive. And it was either do we set something up with Okotoks or we do it with the best of the West. And we kind of just said, you know what, we're going to come out May 2nd. We're going to play Langley for 16 innings on the Monday. We're going to play UFV on the Tuesday. They're going to throw both sides because I want to make sure our arms can bounce back for the tournament. And then we're going to travel up and play Okanagan on the Wednesday. Play both, so they're going to pitch both sides for us, and then we'll start the tournament on Thursday. So we're a little light on arms. It's one of those things. I sent it out to our 17s and 18s just to see, you know, what the interest level is, because it was additional. Like, we didn't plan to do this, right? So it would be an additional charge for them to take part in this. And, you know, positionally, I think we'll be very, very strong. We'll have some 24s, three or four 24 arms that are going to be very good. But we won't have our best arms in the tournament. But nonetheless, I'm really excited. It's going to be fun. Trying to bring the East and West kind of closer together. And should be a fun environment. And it's in May, so it's not going to be as cold. So
yeah, right.
May, should be. May, yeah. Kamloops sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Kamloops in May is like what? Like, what do you got, Isaiah? Like 15 to 20? Kamloops
in
May?
Oh, come on, 25. We're going to 20.
Yeah, wow. Right. That's a promise.
That's a lie.
That was, you know, very assertive. I was going to say, bro, I don't remember it like that at all, man. Come on.
A lie. Dude, that night game is like 4 degrees, man.
Hopefully Marty gives us the little feature game. I always enjoyed my time going up there and watching Vauxhall and Langley go at it, usually on the Wednesday or Thursday night. So it'd be nice to – we'll see if Okotoks in our pool or not. Who knows? There's some good teams.
But don't sleep on NDBJ this year.
They're going to be good there.
Yeah.
White Rock has some arms too, don't they,
yeah,
this year?
Yeah, Marshall is 92-ish. We got three guys, high 80, low 9, a couple bangers, but it's going to be a very talented tournament this year. Like, I think it's going to be more talented in that tournament than it's been in the last 5-ish. Like, there's a lot of guys that I think are going to be very impressive, especially because, like, my favorite part about all this is that I haven't seen anybody, because last summer, our most at-bats last summer was 100. So, and it's been 2 years since anybody's gotten a whole lot of at-bats. So, like, everybody's kind of a mystery.
You guys will have some games, obviously, prior to, though, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the only thing I'm dreading. We'll get to play in IMG, right? We'll play, you know, 7 to 10 games down there. But then we come back, and there's a lull for a month and a half. And then we'll kind of head out west and go get them, boys. So, it'll be fun. Nonetheless, I'm glad we got a chance to do it. So,
mm-hmm. Exciting, man. Exciting.
Yeah. I have a gift for you, by the way. So while watching the documentary, I was like, why do they go 1-2 J's? That makes no sense to me. Like, 1-2 J, right? Why don't you guys go OB J's? You know, that's my gift. That's my gift to the players.
To the organization.
It's just right there.
Yeah, wow. They can handle that all they want. I don't worry about that stuff too much. Whatever they want to do, it makes them ready to go. So be it. So,
wow. Yeah.
1-2 J's it is.
It's a great looking doc. It's a great looking doc. I've been enjoying it so far. I watched both episodes this morning again. I've been seeing it twice now. I just wanted to kind of get a feel for the culture that you guys have, because I think the documentary does a really good job in showcasing the kids and their personalities and And then, you know, Steed and his personality, fucking beauty, love him.
Yeah, well, the crazy part, honestly, about that documentary is the guy that's doing it has absolutely no previous history in doing that type of stuff.
You couldn't tell, man. It's very professional. Yeah,
Sportsnet actually reached out last week and asked, like, who the hell is this guy, right? So wow. We actually offered him a job, but he turned it down, thank God. So that was probably the best hire since I've been here was getting him and the other guy on board to – And I mean, not just for that, but it allows us to, we got a lot of live game footage from this summer, this fall into our database, right? You know, college coaches want to see, you know, quality live game footage, right? So it's been good. It's been a win-win for sure.
That's great. Wow. Is there anything in the future that you want to implement? Like what's like the next two things? Like just briefly.
I give you all my
no
secrets,
spoilers. Okay,
man.
This isn't a president.
I just said it was competitive out here, man. I can't give you that stuff. No, we got a few different things on the go. Yeah, I'm a big proponent of. I like the school setting. I like the academy piece. I would love to figure out a way that we can somehow amalgamate the two, where it's not just baseball and they're going to 1,000 different schools. The landscape out here is very tough. We have players that – I got a player that comes in from London, takes a train. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then hops on a little bus and then comes to practice, right? So, but for me, I would like to somehow amalgamate having a school setting inside the program. We're working on a big project right now on a field. I'm not going to give you too much detail there, but there's a lot of things going on. So it's never a dull day here. It'll be it's a lot of fun.
Sorry. I'm just so curious, man. Like
you got me excited now, man. I want to get more, but I got it.
TikTok.
That's not a secret. That's like 16 million views, man.
Yeah, that's fair. It's like saying a spoiler alert for Game of Thrones. And it's like, come on, you had your time. It's out there.
Oh, it's we're in a good place. I think hopefully, like I said, hopefully COVID doesn't shut us down. That'll put a wrench in things. But just nice to be back, having everybody under the same roof and start plugging away for 2022.
Yeah. Well, hey man, we've taken up a lot of your time today, and I know you're a busy guy, and it's getting into the afternoon now, so I'm sure you got players rolling in. I appreciate you, and thanks for letting us pick your brain. Hope I didn't ask too many dumb questions.
No, it's all good. I enjoy doing this stuff, and appreciate you guys having me. I saw Stubby Clap on there. I was like, I gotta get on this. How was that interview? I haven't had a chance to listen.
Unreal.
He's the best, man.
He's a special human being. Yeah. That guy.
That was such a shoot your shot moment. I just DM'd him on Twitter, and he was like, "Yeah, let's go." And I was like, awesome. Yeah. So
you got anybody else lined up coming up?
Right now you're our last guy before Christmas. We're looking to see what else we got going on, but we're just trying to stockpile right now, and then we're going to have kind of a post New Year release and just kind of come out with a new season.
Awesome.
Well, yeah,
good stuff, fellas. Well, if you need any, maybe Josh can get on the call, Naylor, one of these days,
or that'd be great.
Need anybody?
Yeah, that'd be great. Wow,
for sure.
Sure.
See what I can do. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah. See if we can squeeze him in. Oh, it's so
yeah. Yeah,
he's a character. He's a lot
of fun. Great. That's great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Corey. I appreciate your time.
Have a good Christmas, guys. I'll be out west. I'm coming out next Sunday, so maybe we can get a coffee or something, which I'd love to see you. So.
Next Sunday. What's the date on that?
I'm there the 19th to the 1st. So
I leave the 17th to the 7th.
No way.
Going to Victoria, and then I'm going to my girlfriend's parents' house.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've changed, Wedge.
Sorry, man.
Thanks a lot. Enjoy, guys. Have a good holiday, guys. All right. Take care. You bet. Bye-bye.
What a professional, hey?
Guys, it seems like everyone you've been bringing on here, Wedge, you're just firing all cylinders. Same with you, Isaiah. I need to bring my A game. Guy's awesome. Oh,
the BBJO was sweet, too. That's good info.
Yeah, he was great.
Can you invest in a fucking Nalgene bottle? What the hell did I just see?
Is that a Tropicana bottle?
It's a president's choice, too.
I'm a PC kind of guy till I die, boy.
Oh, man. I'm going to buy you a water bottle.
Don't sleep on PC stuff, man.
The battery water bottles for Christmas for the boys.
You know what, Wedge? Wedge, no matter how much money's in my bank account, I'll always drink out of a PC water bottle.
That's so not good for you, though. Do you not know about how plastic, like, erodes in water?
After, like, hundreds of years, relax.
No, after, like, three uses.
Wedge, what'd you eat for breakfast today?
Cereal.
What kind of cereal?
Good cereal. Fuck off.
Yeah, that's why don't be giving me health advice.
Okay, let's get back to the thing here. That guy was great.
He was.
Yeah. It seems like that program is on. Okay. We know my viewpoint on OBJ. I was raised different. Okay.
It's the same that I have about the dogs, man. Like,
yes, right.
And it's just salt is what it is. Yeah. And it's okay.
I feel like we contribute to probably 50% of the ocean's salt content, actually.
We're the right?
But bringing right. him on, bringing him on and having and hearing the words straight from the guy. Like,
that's cool.
You can really tell where the success comes from. Like, yeah, obviously. And I asked him the loaded question. The reason I asked him the loaded question was because I knew that he's very humble. Hey, like that's what you get. You ask him questions and he defers. Like, oh, this guy's great. This guy's great. He knows what he's doing. All of this stuff. But yeah. I'll be the one to say that Eck is like he's a career baseball guy. He's made himself this kind of thing. It's like the boy goes to the big city and makes it big, right? Like. Yeah. He's done what he needs to do and he's impacted a lot of lives. And now he's at a position. And this is what I wanted to kind of talk about. He's in a position with OBJ where you're a good person with resources. And that's the line for me, right? If you're a selfish person or just call it a shit person with resources, now that's shitty, you know? But if you're a really good person with resources and you can change lives and impact like the, what, how many kids you say are in his program?
146. I think you said,
how many of those kids are going to be fucking impacted for the rest of their life? 100%. Right. Yeah. 100% of them.
Yeah.
So
it helps having that. What was it? What was the guy you like? What was his name? The old bad guy. Steed. One thing I was getting from that and how he was saying, you know, that not riding that roller coaster is like, you have to be an objective coach, I think, a lot of the time. And it's so hard just to look at it for the game, right? Look at it for the guys in the field, not their personalities and stuff like that. And it's so hard to do that. And for someone who's seen so many teams come through and all that kind of stuff constantly, I'm assuming he's been there for a while or also in the game Steve? For a bit. Yeah, I don't.
2014, I saw.
Yeah. Right. So again, the guy's been around for a minute and like just to have that objective viewpoint of like almost so stubborn that you're not going to change is cool to see, you know, again, really cool to see.
It's like an organic, he is who he is. And that's the same with Eck and Shafe. Like, I don't know, RJ, have you ever met Shafe?
Never met Shafe, never met Eck either.
Shafe is the epitome of he is what he is, you know, like really? you get what you get out of Shafe. And I'm serious about him being a legend in BC men's baseball, dude. Like, he's a lefty pitcher, two-way center fielder. And he literally, if you see him on a roster, you're like, oh, they're going to win the tournament. Because he'll win pitcher of the tournament, auto. And he won't throw bullpens. He'll just show up to the tournament and throw two shut pieces. He'll throw game one and he'll throw the final. And he'll shut out both teams because he's fucking disgusting, bro. He's like 33, 34 years old now. He's got to be around there. And he's still like no bullpens, nothing. He's still 87, 88 with fastballs that move fucking 10 inches of horizontal break and like fucking drop like 10 inches. And it's just like nasty stuff. And his breaking balls are nasty. His changeup's nasty, just max feel. And then when he's not pitching, he'll play center field, make all the good catches, hit, go 3 for 4 with 2 doubles and just like impact the game on so many different levels. And then on top of that, he was my pitching coach at Douglas, led our team to a lot of good pitching outings. And then every once in a while would hop on the mound. And what more can you ask from a pitching coach than to hop on the mound and fucking crush all your hitters' dreams and let them know that they're not very good?
That's legit. Sounds like we need him on, hey?
Jave?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the next guy, hey? Then, yeah. Yep.
This is the East is finally starting to take over a bit, eh? Starting to trickle over a bit more.
Yeah. Is this our first Ontario coach?
No, yeah. Well, not Ontario. Oh, Ontario coach, yeah, but I mean, we had Stubby on, right?
I suppose.
Yeah, and he's from that area, isn't he? He from Ontario?
Windsor, right? I want to say.
Windsor, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Actually, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. Windsor, so. But yeah, this is the first actual Ontario-based coach right now.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, furthest we've gone.
Awesome.
You should ask them about Eric. I think Eric Owens lived there for a couple of years and did a bunch of baseball training. I remember him mentioning he was in Toronto for a long time. Yeah.
No, we should have.
Yeah.
I don't remember where he said. Anyways, we're talking about nothing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good time to sign off. What do you think?
Let's do it then.
Okay.
All right. That was Corey Eckstein, OBJ President and Director of Player Development. And this is us saying goodbye.
Ciao.
Welcome to the Badger.
Two, swing and a miss. Good slider.